Looking in Genesis 3 as we continue that chapter, finish it tonight. So what do you say, shall we preach a minute for every person here? Would that be about 1 minute for every person? Doesn't mean you can leave after your minute's over, though. You have to stay for everybody else's minute. Stay all together. Glad you made it out. I know it's kind of a yucky night, and I know a lot of family members and traveling going on and sickness and everything else, so good to see you out tonight. And I want to remind us where we were at the end of last week. We had left Adam and Eve in rather a rotten place. They had eaten of the tree that God had told them not to eat of. They had realized the condition that they were in. They knew they were naked. They tried to cover it up. They tried to hide from God. God comes asking them some questions to draw their attention to their condition. But if we remember just what was said, God told them if they ate of that tree, they would surely die. And so now here they are, they've done it. And the fear is overwhelming them, and they're, of course, feeling guilty as well, and they're hiding. And God questions them, and He finally said in verse 11, "Did you eat of the tree that I told you not to eat of?" Now, again, we talked about He already knew the answer to that question. He's simply giving them the opportunity to confess it. And so in verse 12, we see another failure. We learn from this verse that sin leads to more sin. Adam has the opportunity, after God's asked him, "Did you eat of the tree?" He has the opportunity to man up, as they say, and own up to what he's done and admit it. Instead, however, he plays the blame game. Let's shift the blame to somebody else. Wasn't my fault. Couldn't have been my fault. You didn't realize this game had been being played that long, did you? All the way from the beginning. The man said, "The woman whom you gave me to be with me, she gave me the fruit of the tree and I ate." Now, Adam figures if you're going to go in, go all in. If you're going to blame somebody, go all the way. A lot of times we say, well, he blamed Eve. But he didn't stop with Eve. Notice what he says, "The woman you gave me." He puts the blame on God. I never did this before this woman was here. It must be, and you're the one that gave me the woman. It's your fault. How many times have we or others that we know blamed the source of authority, or even to the point of blaming God for their own wrongdoing? We see it all the time. People get into trouble with the law, they blame the law. We do something wrong, we may blame our parents, we may blame the teacher, we may blame the boss, you name it, wherever we are in life. But we find somebody to blame. And a lot of times we blame the very one that gave the commandment that we're violating. And I've seen it time and again, and you probably have too. We don't want to admit we were wrong. We want to blame somebody else. What we find here, not only does one sin lead to another sin, not only does Adam blame Eve and ultimately God, but also we see how sin damages and destroys relationships. Now sometimes people will make a statement like, "Well, it's my life. And my sin, what I'm doing, it doesn't hurt anybody else. It doesn't affect anybody else." That's not true. Sin affects every relationship that you have. Here, Adam's sin and Eve's sin destroyed their relationship with God, but it also damaged their relationship with each other. All of a sudden, instead of the two being one, remember, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife and they'll be one. instead of being one, there's now a division as Adam tries to blame Eve for his problem. The perfect life that they had, the perfect unity as husband and wife, is now a conflict and strife. And it's because of the sin that entered in. Verse 13, God turns to the woman and He says, "What have you done?" And the woman, of course, not to be outdone, she has to blame somebody too. She blames the serpent. "The serpent deceived me, and I ate." Can't take the responsibility for our choices, can we? We've got to blame our parents, or our ancestors, our DNA, our upbringing, the school system, the government, society, the church, somebody. We've always got to blame somebody. That's one of the things that the Bible teaches us, is that each of us is responsible for our own response to God. We can't rightfully blame everybody else or anybody else. We have to accept that. Well, Eve blames the serpent, and so God turns to the serpent. You know, the old joke is that Adam blamed Eve, and Eve blamed the serpent, and the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. Maybe he did before this. That's what God says to him is, "Because you have done this, cursed are you above all livestock and above all beasts of the field. On your belly you shall go, and dust you shall eat all the days of your life." Maybe he had legs before that. We don't know. But whatever this curse was, he's going to have to be crawling on the dirt from now on. Not going to be able to hold his head up high, so to speak. But that's certainly not the end of it. It's just the beginning, as God is not going to stop with just putting a curse on the serpent. But we see from this passage that sin brings punishment. The serpent is cursed. Now again, whether this was, and I know we think about it, we've got in the picture here, we've got a snake up there face to face. I don't think Eve looked like that, and I don't think the serpent looked like that, but it kind of gets the picture across to us that we usually have, doesn't it? I think this serpent may very well have been a very unique beast. And I don't know but what, this one doesn't exist on earth anymore today, any more than the tree of knowledge and good and evil exists on the earth today. Or for that matter, the tree of life. But whatever this serpent was, that it's really Satan. We find that out later on in Scripture. That old serpent, the devil, Satan, that dragon, as he's referred to in Revelation, and time and again he's referred to with these different terms and descriptions. But I think elsewhere it does indicate that this wasn't just another animal. This was something very different. This was Satan taking on a form. But in verse 15, the curse on the serpent continues. "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. And he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." This is often regarded as the first messianic prophecy. The first time that a prophecy of the coming Messiah, of Jesus, is mentioned. The offspring of the woman would be Jesus. Of course, the offspring of Satan would be all of his minions, all of those who remember Jesus talking to the leaders, the religious leaders of his day, said, "You are of your father, the devil." Those offspring. As far as we know, again, that this is not a literal snake in that sense. As far as we know, Jesus never got bit in the heel by a snake. But Satan bit him in the heel by causing his death. But what Satan didn't realize was that was the very thing God wanted him to do. because that was the very thing that was going to crush his head. But we see also that sin brings hatred, strife, enmity. Enmity is a word we don't use a whole lot. We usually just say hatred. But it makes enemies of those who didn't have to be enemies. And yet they become enemies. But God begins to reveal His plan to fix this problem. You know, we might think, this is the end of the road. If God strikes them dead, that's it for humanity, because as far as we know, they don't have any offspring at this point. Certainly none that are old enough to continue the race. And so God begins to lay out a plan. She's going to have offspring. She's not going to die right now. I don't know if Adam and Eve realized at this point exactly what God was saying. Did they realize the reprieve that they were receiving from, in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die, to now, you're going to have offspring? I don't know if they recognized it just yet. Maybe their fear, maybe their guilt was so overwhelming in this circumstance, they weren't realizing what was happening. Maybe they did. Maybe they were hearing what He had to say. Verse 16, we learn that sin brings consequences not only to ourselves, but to others. Many times others that were not involved. To the woman He says, I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be contrary to your husband, but he shall rule over you. Eve caused problems not only for herself, but for every woman who has a child after her. These things were multiplied. And the relationship between Adam and Eve, again, is affected by this sin. It changes. I don't know what God's original plan for how the husband and wife relationship was there in the garden. But after the sin, He says to the woman, now your husband's going to rule over you. Seemingly, there was no husband ruling over wife before that. No man led. Of course, there was only two, Adam and Eve, on all of earth. But seemingly, they were side-by-side companions at that point. And Adam may have had a bit of an advantage, we might say, because he was the firstborn, the first created. But it wasn't until the sin came along that God puts this hierarchy situation into place. And again, that has affected everyone that's lived from that time on. In verse 17, Adam's not going to get off scot-free either. To Adam He said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Now think about that for a minute. God had spoken to Adam and had told him very clearly, do not do this. But Adam listened to his wife. When Paul talks about this in Timothy, he says, the woman being deceived was in the transgression. The indication is that the man, he wasn't deceived. He knew, and he made a choice. A willful decision to listen to his wife instead of God. Anytime God says one thing, and somebody else says something contrary to that, and we listen to that other person instead of God, we've sinned. A grievous sin when we do that. I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. But you listened to your wife, and you ate of the tree. And then he begins to curse Adam. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Suffering. Thorns and thistles, verse 18 says, it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. The sweat of the brow, the pain, the difficulty, the sorrow, the harshness of labor. You see, there was work before this. Remember, we talked about when God created Adam and Eve and He put them in the garden. He gave them the job to tend the garden. He gave them work. But that work was pleasant. Not anymore. Now it has become thorns and thistles. You're going to eat by pain. Blisters and sweat and thorns and aches and pains from having to work harder to get the ground to produce because it's cursed now because of you. It's not going to produce like it did before. It's not going to be a wonderful little garden that's already planted and prepared for you and you just have to tend it and keep it. Now you're going to have to go out there and make your own garden. That's a little harder, isn't it? To make your garden than to keep a garden that's already been made. That's hard work. Sin causes the pleasant to become unpleasant. Man was given this work that was a pleasant part of his perfect life in the garden, but now, because of sin, things are no longer pleasant. And then we see, by the sweat of your face you shall eat your bread, until you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Even though God gives them a reprieve, He doesn't give them a total pardon, does He? The sentence of death is postponed, but not commuted. You're still going to die, but just not yet. Sin brings physical death. Because of Adam's sin, all die. James talks about that. Lust brings forth sin, and sin, when it's full grown, it brings forth death. Physical death, many times, in our own lives. Spiritual death, yes, absolutely, separation from God. That was the first thing that the sin did, was separate them from God. Immediately, they felt this distance from God that they had not felt before. They were afraid of God. They had not been afraid of Him before. Things had changed drastically. Now, it's important that we understand here, just because Adam brought sin into the world and all die, does not mean that we inherit the sin that Adam committed, that he had. We don't inherit that sin. We just face the consequences that were brought into the world because of that sin. And that's important for us to realize and recognize. Romans 5, 12 through 14 points out to us that the consequences of sin have passed on all mankind. Even those who don't sin like Adam did. You still have to die. Verse 20, we see the man called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. Now, whether this indicates that there actually were children already born, or whether this is just sort of a prophetic, she's going to be the mother of all living, which is seemingly more likely. If there had been children born, it would have been an interesting situation. We don't read about any. In fact, what we do read is the first time a child is born is outside the garden, and that's Cain, and we'll read about them, him and his siblings later on. But every human being that has ever lived or does now live on earth is a descendant of Adam and Eve. Really, we can trace it even less distant than that. Noah's three sons and their wives, those six individuals are responsible for all of the people that are on earth today. But of course, there were some before them. It's important for us to think about that and realize that any time we have hatred toward another human being, whether it be because of skin color or nationality, whether it be because of some other thing that differs us from them, we're really hating our own kinfolks, because we're all children of God in the sense that we are descended from Adam and Eve. Not all of us may be children of God in the sense of coming to Him in faith and becoming a child in that way, being born again into His family and adopted into His family. But all of us, as human beings, are brothers and sisters, or at least distant cousins. And we need to think about that before we start hating someone else. Verse 21, the Lord God made for Adam and for his wife garments of skins and clothed them. Remember, they had taken some fig leaves and sewed those together to make some garments to try to cover themselves. That wasn't good enough. Maybe it wasn't durable enough. Some people propose that, well, what they had didn't cover enough. I don't know what the meaning behind that part of it is, but I do know this. In order for God to clothe them, something innocent had to die. Those skins that God used to clothe them came from beasts which had done no wrong. I say they didn't deserve to die. Adam and Eve deserved to die. And so right here, even at the very beginning, we see the glimmer of the concept of a substitutionary death. The death of the sinless for the sinner. It's already starting right here. Sin brings physical death even at times to the innocent. These animals had to die for them. And you know, the other thing that we notice here is that even though Adam and Eve sinned, even though they had rebelled against God and then tried to cover it up and hide from Him and blame everybody else, and including Adam trying to blame him, God still cares about them. He still provides for them. His patience, His long-suffering. Now, is there a limit to it? Yes. There's a limit. And I pray that none of us ever reach that limit. But we see just how far He's willing to go for those that He cares about. Even though they had sinned. But then in verse 22, the Lord said, "Behold, the man has become like one of us in knowing good and evil." So here in this, you know, the serpent had a little bit of it right, didn't he? He said, God knows if you eat of that fruit, you'll become like Him. Well, they did in that one way. They knew good and evil. But we saw before that that didn't make them more like God. It made them less like God. Now, lest he reach out his hand and take of the tree of life and eat and live forever. God recognizes that the worst possible thing to have happen would be for the man and woman in their fallen state to wind up living forever. Now, I don't know if this tree of life was a eat it one time and live forever, or you had to eat it every day to live forever. I don't know exactly how it worked. But God recognized that this did not need to happen. They did not need to be able to eat of the tree of life after they had rebelled and were in this sinful condition. That couldn't happen. And so God sent him out from the Garden of Eden to work the ground from which he was taken. As we've gone through this chapter, we've seen that sin causes the loss of so many good things. Man's driven out of paradise. He's lost his perfect relationship with God. And from here on, the theme of the remainder of the Bible is the revelation of God's plan to redeem mankind and try to restore that relationship. To try to get us back to that same condition that we were before that fall. And that's ultimately what we hope for when we hope for heaven. We know from this point on, everything that the Bible does is going to be about pushing this story forward of how God is going to restore the relationship between himself and man. Because man can't. Mankind can't do anything to fix this. Only God can fix it. So he drove the man out. And at the east of the Garden of Eden, he placed the cherubim and a flaming sword that turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. That, as far as we know, that tree of life isn't here anymore at all. Some would say, based on what Revelation says, that it's in heaven now, awaiting us coming there to be able to eat of it again. How much of that's actual, literal, and how much of that's figurative, I don't know. Cherubim that are mentioned here are mentioned another 90 more times in the Bible by name, either singular or plural. And in some other cases, the same description is given, and yet they are called living creatures instead of cherubs or cherubim. The flaming sword, that's a pretty nifty, I mean, a flaming sword that turns every way to guard the way to the tree of life. You ever seen the picture? You always see the picture of an angel holding a flaming sword. That's not what it says. It talks like the flaming sword was doing its own thing. It was automated, we might say. It's never mentioned again. We don't know anything else about that flaming sword that he uses here. The danger that we have there is to get focused on trying to figure out the thing that we don't know about. An awful lot of people, their faith has been destroyed by trying to focus their attention on all the things that the Bible doesn't tell us about. And they're curious about it. And I understand that. I'm curious about a lot of things that the Bible doesn't tell me about. But we can't let that destroy our faith. We have to remember Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things of the Lord are His. But those things He has revealed to us are for us and for our children. To continue to learn and study what we can. As you look back on your life and you think about the sin in your life and the damage that it's caused, how does that make you feel? And how does it make you feel to know that in spite of that, in spite of the things that you've done, God still loves you? He's still reaching out to you. He's still calling you to Him, wanting you to come to Him, and that He went so far as to fulfill that prophecy from chapter 3 and verse 15 of the seed of woman that was going to come and crush the serpent's head. And He did that. Paul said, how can those of us who have died to sin live any longer therein? Does focusing on Adam and Eve and the consequences of their sin, does that encourage us to get the sin out of our life? To get rid of it? To stay away from it? When we see all the consequences that their sin brought, our sin brings consequences as well. It affects our relationships with God and with others. It hurts other people. People that we love and care about. It hurts us most of all. If you're here tonight and you need to come to God, maybe you've been hiding from Him like Adam and Eve. Maybe been running from Him. Maybe you've been trying to blame somebody else and everybody else for the problems and the sin in your life. Quit running, quit hiding, quit denying and trying to shift the blame. Take responsibility for what you've done and ask Him to help you to overcome those things and to forgive you of those things. He can do that. That's why He sent Jesus. If you're here and you have a need to respond for whatever reason, please come as we stand and sing.